In today's video, we're going to be talking about 10 out of 10 albums. These full lengths that I'm going to present to you, I feel like personally are perfection, where every single song, interlude, detail, and musical note strum in this album, I feel like is perfection, and there is nothing negative I could say about these albums. This might be a little controversial, but when it comes to melodic death metal, if there is one melodic death metal album I would consider a 10, as controversial as this band is, it really shows that saying that bad people can make good music. And I'm not endorsing their beliefs or how they view things. I'm not. It's just the fucking riffs on this album are so damn good. Argislent with, I always forget the name of this album, I know. Something Bigotry, I think. Jesus Christ, the riffs on this are so damn catchy, but so monstrous and just so packed full of beef. They're so beefy, these riffs, along with the production that really enhances the melodic riffs and tone, the vocals that are just monstrous and whatnot. Besides the lyrics that you can only really understand if you follow along with the lyric sheet that are insanely fucked up and I do not agree with whatsoever, I can't deny it. This is a 10 out of 10 melodic death metal album because I've never heard riffs just such a standout, have just such a punch, and just stand out from a scene full of so many melodic death metal bands. But something about these riffs, maybe it's just how beefy and catchy and melodic they are, that I can never, ever get sick of it. So if you want some of the best melodic death metal, if you can get past the very racial lyrical themes, this is it, Argislent. Moving on. Pest Noir with their debut full length. I always say debut full length because I have no idea how to say their album title.
You're listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
Fire up a bowl and accept your fate.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to another thrilling episode of the Toilet of Hell radio show. I'm your host, Joe Thrash and Kill. Dealing with some bad omens at the moment, but we can get to that later. I'm joined today by my co-host, 365 Days of Horror, also known as Golden Jordan. Golden Jordan, how are you?
I think all omens are bad at this point, aren't they?
I've never seen a good omen in my life, so that's where we're at with that. And hey, we also got that there, Briticide!
As you say bad omen, I'm looking out my front window, and there's literally a black cat just like walking slowly across the sidewalk.
Just pointing to its watch,
just staring at me, and not I mean, like, you know, staring forward, but it's in front of my face, and now I am just shitting my pants.
Anyone ever tell you you're bad luck? You know, those were my mother's dying words. I was walking my dogs right before I got on the mic, and a flock of seagulls flew overhead. Now, I don't know if any of you guys know about geography, but I don't live anywhere. I don't live anywhere near the ocean or real water. So,
but if the Simpsons tell me anything, they only go out to the sea to die. So you're doing okay.
I don't know. You folks on the coastal area, you're fucked.
Yeah, what you need to do is you need to kill one of them and hang it around your neck.
Yeah, that's. I watched a documentary the other day called The Lighthouse that said that was a good idea.
Right. Bad luck to kill a seabird.
Who was the guy with the big face in that movie?
Willem Dafoe.
He was born to just play terrifying, terrifying roles like that.
I mean, there's actors where they're like just always the villain because if you look at them, there's no possible way they could be like the hunky leading man.
Well, he was, wasn't he? He was Jesus in The Last Temptation of Christ, wasn't he?
My point stands.
I think a pretty large population of the internet has implied that he would make a fantastic Joker for a Batman movie, and the fact that they've just been sitting on him for that for so many years has been like a crime against cinema. But what are you gonna do? He's a little too old for it now. I think
he's getting up in years. You guys ever see Antichrist?
No, thank you.
Keep it that. Yeah. Anyway, rather than talk about the various cinema crimes of Lars von Trier, I figured we'd do a special episode this time. How does that sound?
All of our episodes are very special.
Kind of.
They're all...
But this one's really special.
There's no episode like any other episode.
I don't know that that's true. I think we need to get our fact checker on that one.
Every episode that we make deserves a little 8-inch tall trophy with a little plastic gold boy kicking a soccer ball on it.
Yeah, this is why our show is mediocre, is because we keep getting all these participation trophies for just putting out weekly episodes. I really don't have anywhere to put them anymore.
I've been building shelves.
That's impressive, you know, like living in an apartment, having that shelf space. Anyway, getting aside, we're losing the plot here because we're doing something real today, kind of. Jordan, you had a pretty nifty idea that you put forth like 6 months ago.
And we've ignored.
Every week I was like, yeah, that's good. We'll do that next week.
Well, we'd say, yeah, we'll do it. I'd send you what I had planned, and then I'd never hear back until Sunday morning when we record. And be like, yeah, maybe next week. What happened in the news? Well, thankfully, there is no more news. News is gone. News is dead, at least when it comes to heavy metal.
They've deleted the news.
All it took was a global pandemic for us to start using your ideas.
And yet somehow Blabbermouth keeps pumping out articles. But I really need to know about Wes Scantlin from Puddle of Mud butchering a Nirvana song. Every website needs to cover that.
Was that the big thing this week, or was it Ice-T and Danny Diablo threatening to murder the guy from Trapped or whatever?
It was a long week, so I think we fit both of those in.
Oh, good.
It was, I think the Wes Scantlin thing was surfaced by, what's that Facebook, Twitter page that you like that posts really bad songs?
Catatonic Youths.
Yes.
Shout out to Catatonic Youths.
Yeah, they resurfaced this just horrendous Nirvana cover from Puddle of Mud where he's clearly struggling to hit notes, and everyone had a big laugh about it, but we're not here to talk about that because that's the only thing that happened. We are here to talk about our embarrassing local bands that we used to love and grew up with.
See, I didn't catch the memo that this was supposed to be embarrassing. So,
I mean, I'm not embarrassed by what I like, but I'm sure other people will be embarrassed for me.
I mean, I have plenty of things to be embarrassed about in my life, but most of them aren't related to like the media I consumed. they're mostly related to the stupid shit that I did.
I mean, I've seen your website.
Thanks, pal.
Getting real talk hours here.
And also, like, was this supposed to be high school specifically, this college age? Like, where are we at in the time scale?
I mean, I was thinking high school. I don't think it's all that interesting now to be like, hey, this local band that I played with is pretty good. Here you go. I think it's a lot more fun to just go back to the past and be like, oh, yeah, bands used to sound like this, or this is what bands had to do in 2003 to record an album. They couldn't just do it in their basement on a laptop.
That's fucking true. I remember that very well.
And you can hear the differences, too.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember that you would scrape up between four people like $800 to record in some guy's fucking trailer. The result is always going to sound like shit. Yeah, and you're going to listen to it and feel mortified, and then you'll keep listening to it and convince yourself maybe it's not that bad. It sucks, and you know it.
Or you'd have guys like trying to figure out a way to do it themselves, and they would like do things like hang microphones from the ceiling and just record directly in some obnoxious way, and it would a lot of extremely bad demos came out as albums during this time.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to give myself a mulligan on this because, as I've mentioned a couple of times before, I grew up in the middle of nowhere. There was no scene. There were no bands anywhere nearby aside from like the ones that me and my friends would play in ourselves. So I had to move to the big city to find actual local bands.
I don't know what it was in the water with the Springfield area, but apparently sometime around the late 90s, early 2000s, literally every guy with an earring and a haircut just decided, hey, let's take At the Gates music and make it sensitive. And so my area bred Killswitch Engage, Shadows Fall, All That Remains over in Boston. There was Unearth, and you had Converge come out of Boston, and then like also in my area was the Acacia Strain for Chicopee. So like deathcore was just about fucking started with those clowns, and just I don't know, like and these are the things I saw when I was younger. Like I was growing up just like in a shitty bar, watching shows that would be like some white belt's dream tour like 10 years later or something. It was just, this is what happened. And, you know, so I had to struggle to find stuff that was, you know, more obscure and silly.
What was going on in New Jersey?
A lot of new metal.
Fair, fair.
Well, Jordan, you're like the, I think you got some years on us. You're the big daddy of the show.
Aren't I like a year older than you?
Yeah, aren't you?
How old are you?
34.
Oh, I'm 32.
I'm 32.
How old did you think I was?
Like 36.
I thought you were like, yeah, same.
God damn.
You're so much more mature than we are.
I just think you had a lot.
I've gotten that my entire life.
I just think that you got started in the scene earlier than we did. And you were doing things like related to shows and things. And I'd hear you tell stories about things you were doing 10, 15 years ago. And like at that time, I was, you know, probably tied to my computer playing some godforsaken MMORPG or something, so I just assumed you were more of an adult.
Me and Brenna, we're just new jacks. You've been down since day one.
Back in my day, I mean, I think the first show I like by myself or but with friends and no parental guidance I ever went to, I was probably like 14.
I think I was 12 when I went to a first show with friends, but I've told that story before. That doesn't even that one doesn't count. That's not worth repeating.
My first local show was actually pretty fucking awesome. I went to a place that has long since closed. It was an indoor skate park that was huge and had everything that anybody who ever owned a skateboard would ever want to, like, you know, break their neck on. And like in the middle of the skate park, they were just having like local punk bands playing. And one of them was called The Grand Pricks. And I looked so hard to find music from them to feature on like today, but I could not find it.
But that's always the worst. When you know a band, you know they existed, you know they had music, but you just cannot find it.
Yeah, and they were big. They had a patch on everybody's backpack, you know. They were a pretty big deal, but they've since just dissipated into obscurity.
Well, if you recorded music before, say, 2007, that shit is gone, like, for the most part. The places you uploaded it to don't exist anymore, you know? So it's tough to find that shit. MySpace going down was a huge loss to every cyber grand band across the world.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, you really have to rely on someone like myself who held on to a local compilation CD to upload it to a YouTube or somehow get it on Spotify or something like that, just to remind people that it existed.
Yeah, I had a huge assortment of CDRs from, you know, local bands that I would, you know, get from shows or whatever, but I only kept one of them. I don't even have that anymore. And all I did was I upload my favorite song to YouTube because I couldn't allow it to be gone.
I think we should tell us about that song. I think we should play that one first.
So this one doesn't even count because it wasn't even local to me, dude. But
I thought it was until like today.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's still so count. We can play as many as we want. If you got like five songs, we'll pad this shit out, man. Let's
do it. Why not? We're gonna have a good time today because I mean nobody's going anywhere. We're just gonna have fun. We're gonna talk about the old times, you know. So I lived with one guy in college for 3 years. One of my best friends still to this day. He was a big punk and metal dude. His older brother lived with us on the couch occasionally, stealing my beer and cigarettes. Who was more of a punk guy, if you couldn't tell. I think he works for like the State Department now.
They all do.
He would go to more punk shows than us, and he found a CDR on the ground in the parking lot one night, and he brought it home to us, and we listened to it, and it was really something else. The band was called George Moshington. The CDR was their, I think, their only release, a little EP called 1770 Fuck You. they were a Revolutionary War themed hardcore band from Arizona.
Do we know if they got dressed up at all for their show?
They did. They used to have a music video for the song we're going to play on YouTube, but it kept getting pulled down due to gratuitous nudity. The guitarist kept taking the camera from the camera guy and putting it at his taint, his bare ass taint. And so that for that reason, that kept getting pulled. So I had to take the CDR, take this one track, and upload it to YouTube myself, where it still exists today.
I don't think that's fair. I feel like there is no community guideline to any social media platform specifically stating no grundle allowed.
I have yet to see that guideline, but you know, big tech, you know, or Big Brother, if you ask me.
I feel like men were allowed to show our nipples online. We should be allowed to, you know, show the space between our sack and our hole. That's just
I agree.
I think that's fair. A Dave Matthews Band song.
Sack and our hole. Hey.
Right on. That's good shit.
Sack and our hole.
We'll clip that one to the best of show.
Great.
I'm just going to read some of the tracks from the EP on here. A1 is what we'll get to, but some of the other ones on here were Baberham Drinking, You Don't Care, parentheses, About the Scene, bracket, You Care, bracket, About Being Seen, parentheses. One If by Land, Three If by Pit, 1, 2, 3, 4, I Declare a Scene, War, and 1770, Fuck You. This track that we're about to listen to, though, the best thing they ever did, if they ever get back together, you know, it's going to be tough to top this one. It's called Boston Teabag Party.
Favorite song ever made. I didn't know it existed. It's I'm worse for not knowing it all this time.
I mean, it's cheating on this, you know, retrospective episode or whatever, but I'm just glad that we can get that out there to our audience, because your life is never going to be the same now.
Yeah, talk about wasted years. But we got them back. I'm glad that we could share it with the viewers and everybody, and I hope they make a comeback. I hope this is their big break and they get back together and they start touring during quarantine. I don't know.
I mean, the way you found this band is such a throwback to how people used to discover bands in the early 2000s, late 90s even, just getting compilation CDs or like three song samplers being handed to you outside of a show. I mean, that doesn't really happen anymore. Like, people just discover a new band because Spotify recommended it to them or their friend sent them a YouTube link. Like, I don't know. Do bands still make these?
I don't think they do. But granted, I haven't been to Warped Tour since, you know, I was in high school, but it would be that as you were making your way across the parking lot, you'd come across like you'd have a whole fucking armful of shitty CDRs.
Not to get too nerdy and technical, but push up my glasses here. So maybe in like the early 2000s, there was a kind of CD player in your computer you used to have, and it had some technology in it called LightScribe. And I gotta say, this was like the greatest thing in the universe for all of these local scene dudes, because how it worked is you could go on some sort of option and some sort of program and actually just draw whatever JPEG you wanted on like the white side of the CDR and actually put out something that they thought looked like a professional album. But it was like really fucking weird feeling to the hand. It was like paper on top of a CD. Do you guys remember at all what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, I remember it very well.
Yeah.
it was the bridging of the gap between this is a demo CD that you like handwrite stuff on it and having an actual CD professionally made. This was like the in-between, hey, we're kind of serious, you know, this isn't just a jokey demo or something like that.
I would always try to figure out that program, and for some reason, like, my JPEG was always off center or something.
Yeah, no, I remember giving this a try with one of my shitty bands, and it looked like shit. It sounded like shit. The actual song itself was shit. But I still hustled those things.
I'll never forget just like the beautiful seafoam green sheen of the bottom of like a CDRW, not even CDR, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I could rewrite this bitch.
I once bought a CD at a flea market for like $5, thinking it was the real CD. And then afterwards, as I'm like putting it into my CD player, I flip it over and see it's that color. I was like, God.
Yeah. Shit. Why don't we take things from the southwest to the northeast? Where do you want to go with this, Jordo?
We could do one of mine next. The first band is called Flipside.
Flipside.
Yes, Flipside. FLIPZYDE. As you can tell, it's a nu metal band. When I first came across them, I was a sophomore in high school, and in my science class, I don't know how it works for other people's high schools, but typically it was like, if you're a sophomore, you're in a sophomore science class, you're with other sophomores, stuff like that. And this was a little bit different, so I had some like juniors and seniors in it as well. And there was a senior in the class that I became friends with, and he was like very into Korn and Slipknot and that sort of stuff, the big giant pants, the whole deal. And he introduced me to this band and was like, go on Napster, download this song, do this, and let's go see them next week at Birch Hill, for those people that remember it, that grew up in the tri-state area, kind of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York area, which if you go back to our interview with Ron Verod from KO Dot and Psalm Zero, we talk about it at length. That was the spot. We grew up a 10-minute drive from it, and there were tons of shows there. And they had a lot of local shows, and this band Flipside was, at one point, their kind of bragging rights was that they were the biggest unsigned band in New Jersey. And for a local show, it was pretty much the most people I've ever seen to see a local band. And I think what set them apart from other nu metal bands at the time, and you'll kind of hear this in the song, is that they had some pretty good ideas or creative ideas that were different. The vocalist could sing.
Are there two vocalists here, or is the singer also the rapper?
I believe the singer is also the rapper.
Gotcha.
Just for perspective, the band was sponsored by UFO Pants.
Fuck yes.
Shit. And it's even better than being signed.
The rumor was, and I don't know how true this is, but you all remember the band 40 Below Summer?
Yeah.
Vaguely.
They were friends with that band, and there was like a showcase for Flipside for record labels. I can't even imagine if this happens anymore, but record label representatives would go to your show to listen to you, to see crowd reaction, all that stuff, and to gauge if the major record label should sign you. And the rumor was that they had 40 Below Summer play the show as well, and 40 Below Summer got signed instead of them.
Oh, man.
I don't know how true that was, but that was the rumor at the time.
I mean, for most people, like, the only point of reference we have for that shit anymore is, like, Wayne's World. Like, some Mr. Big going to a local show to check out your band. But that surely does not exist anymore, hasn't for a while.
Probably not. I mean, I don't think record labels sign bands anymore.
People still talk about it like it does. They're like, you gotta put your heart and soul into every show, because you never know.
No, I know. I know.
you never know what record label is going to sign the band playing at 12:45 on a 30-band all-day festival.
Yeah.
The audacity of hope. All right, well, let's listen to this thing, then. What's the song called?
The song is called Witness the Sickness.
Fuck yes. we have witnessed the sickness with Lipzide.
Yeah, I could hear the Z's in the sickness.
I agree with you that he can kind of hold a tune there, and then he immediately goes into that extremely aggro white guy rapping style that is not entirely out of vogue still to this day.
I mean, this was like 2002, so this is right in the time where that was popular.
I'm just thinking again, my name is KG Elephant.
But what I liked about them is that he can go into the catchy, clean singing that wasn't half bad.
Yeah, that was kind of a thing where I guess it was Tool that made that a popular thing within the genre. And just a lot of dudes, they would try. You tried for it, but you couldn't even come close to holding a note. So this guy cleared that bar at least.
I mean, my early bands were definitely guilty of that.
Yeah, the less we focus on our own past, the better. It's better to look at other people's past.
I think
point and laugh and hide our stuff.
I think holding a note in any kind of independent music is just about impossible. It's just they can't do it. I don't know. And if you get someone who actually can sing, you're just like amazed that they only have like six people listening to them.
I mean, that really is the thing, though. If you're, you know, if you grew up in punk and metal or whatever, you want to make music, more likely than not, you're a fucking guitar nerd and you spend all your time playing riffs and no time singing at all. So when it comes time to actually record something, you sound like fucking dog shit.
And I mean, like, you'd think that they would just be like, ah, fuck it, I'll just do harsh vocals. And then they're bad at harsh vocals.
Yeah, that sucks.
That's the worst. That's the worst. It's just bad at something bad. It's like being bad at microwaving food.
Fuck.
Well, dude, you can't hit the popcorn button. It doesn't work for all popcorns, and your microwave has a different setting than what they recommend. So,
excuses,
yeah.
Excuses.
I'm late for my microwave cookery class at the Learning Annex.
Yeah.
But that really did take me back to the days of like listening to the hard rock radio station from DFW, and you know, they would do showcases for local new metal bands as well. And like, I think, you know, it's just kind of that kind of thing was happening all over, and the names are long gone to history. You know, I'm sure if you meet an old timer, he'll be glad to tell you all about his band that almost made it. But
there were lots of bands from that time that almost made it.
Yeah, which is kind of funny now. There are no bands that almost make it now.
None. Now it's just already established bands making new bands that still kind of almost make it.
It's got to like hurt extra hard too, because if you made it back then, you would have made money and you would have like been typically set for life.
Yeah, unless you know you fucked up your contract or whatever, which I'm sure is the case with a lot of folks.
Or you didn't pay your taxes and you bought too many Lamborghinis.
That too. I remember a Dallas band that like made it after being pushed incessantly by radio, and I don't even remember what they sound like now. It was called Flicker Stick.
I've heard of that.
and it was like, yeah, these guys are going to have Lamborghinis any minute now. And I'm pretty sure that they all, you know, they all work at gas stations. Like it didn't happen. It didn't happen.
Couldn't even get the latest model of Chevy Silverado.
The stick flickered out.
Yeah. Ask not whom the stick flickers for.
Now they're just
time marches on.
Stick shifters.
Breno, you want to take us to Massachusetts?
Not necessarily, but I'm more than happy to try. Back in the early 2000s, there was a sort of harsher hardcore band that made it so big in the local scene, they actually had merch featured in the mall's Hot Topic.
What?
Which is just like, it's fucking a big ass deal.
Fuck. But you're like almost in the Blue Grape catalog at that point.
Yeah, might as well be. And like I said earlier in the show, when I was growing up in high school, middle school, whatever, like the shows I was going to were Shadows Fall. Like I remember going to a Shadows Fall show at this place called Fat Cats, and you had 12 people kind of wandering around the bar talking to friends while fucking Lamb of God drove all the way out to like open up, and you got Randy Bly in a hat just screaming his heart out and no one cared. It was just fucking surreal. But like There were other bands that managed to somehow stick out of my psyche, and this was one of them. They're called Scurvy, and they are a pirate-themed hardcore band. As badly as I want to feature a track like Polly Want a Beatdown, I got to go with the Grog song, because this was the one song that I think actually had a music video you can see on YouTube. And I'll share a link when we get this featured, but we'll play the Grog song by Scurvy, and of course they have to put in the headline pirate hardcore, just so you make sure you know what you're getting yourself into.
Well, you know, when I'm searching my regular keywords like, you know, pirate hardcore and ninja beatdown, I want to make sure that I get the latest in my feed.
I was talking to my wife about this and just trying to find ideas for like what I could bring up. And she was like, oh, well, you got to bring up Swashbuckle. And I'm just like, Swashbuckle? I was trying to find out if Swashbuckle's from the area, but they're from New Jersey. And I think they like went all the way to Nuclear Blast because they were like that exact kind of cringy melodic metal that would get that far.
Yeah.
But nope, this was different. These are a bunch of scumbags and hoodies like it should be.
Yeah, all right. 2005, 2006 was a weird time for like, ha ha ha, pirate stuff, ha ha ha, ninjas. Like, I never understood that.
Yep.
Well, if you go through LinkedIn right now, since every business is a good 15 years behind the time, it's like, we're looking for a pirate ninja web developer. You got to be a total fucking rock star. And it's like, I will never work for your shitty fucking company.
I was birthed in the flames of that sort of like 2004 irony. I read every article that Maddox ever wrote, just thinking it was the most hilarious thing in the universe. And of course, I went on that fucking ninja website, Real Ultimate Power, and got that book and would read how they would go back and forth about how pirates could definitely kill ninjas and ninjas would definitely kill pirates. And I don't know. I guess I fell on the pirate side myself.
I'll tell a really embarrassing story super quickly.
Please.
For my 19th birthday, I think it was, two different people gave me the Tucker Max book.
Of course. Yeah.
That says a lot about, I guess, who I was as a person as a teenager. I would like to fully disacknowledge that kid.
So for those of us who don't know what that is, can you explain?
Yep. Nope. We're moving on.
Oh, fuck it. I had the alphabet of manliness. And that was much later than high school. I think that was at least in college.
I think the difference between Maddox and Tucker Max was that Maddox was like a badass web developer type dude, and Tucker Max was like a badass rapist.
Yeah. What was that other guy? Dick Masterson? Do you remember him?
I don't. Who was that?
Dick Masterson was kind of from the Maddox camp, and whereas I think Maddox had this little bit of self-aware satire to him and didn't really mean like all the fucked up shit he'd put on paper to be funny. Dick Masterson definitely did. Like, pretty much the entire point of his brand was just being like a chauvinist asshole. Really, really believed everything he said. Eventually, those two guys like started a brand together and started a webcast.
Oh shit.
And that was the ultimate downfall of Maddox. Was, you know, him and Maddox
I know the story.
Yeah.
Because I listened to a comedy podcast a little while ago that had this guy on. He fucked Maddox's wife or something.
Yeah.
And then he released an album calling Maddox a cuck, like with all of these free to use like Swiss Christmas songs that somehow hit number one on their charts.
That's right. It was all number one on iTunes. It was the most ludicrous story. And all of this that we're talking about happened only a few years ago. Like, while these
I'm
guys
definitely
were
a worse person for knowing this now.
Well, these guys were like has-beens at this point. They really had no brand left, and they were trying to maintain relevancy in a new internet. So they were doing the podcast thing, they were doing the YouTube thing, and they were getting like, oh god, just fractions of the views on these things. And in the middle of all this, there's this hilarious little story. And then Maddox dragged him to court and wrote like the court document himself about all the laws that he broke.
Oh, always a good idea.
Yeah.
A good idea.
And used like, you could tell because he was using like his typical stupid sass in all of the bits and pieces of law that he thought were worth bringing up. It was such a fucking ride. But yeah, Scurvy, the grog song, pirate hardcore. Strange times.
This I say this a lot, but this might be our silliest episode ever. Well, shit, I don't even know where to go from here, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you where to go. We're going to bring it right back to you, and you're going to tell us about any kind of band in Austin that you wanted to bring up.
Okay. Well, we could do the silly theme thing, or we could do a thing that's actually like somewhat serious music. Which one do you want?
We got to go silly first.
Okay.
And then we'll do better stuff more towards the end of the show as people, you know, log out.
So this isn't traditionally metal in any way. This band, the Flame Trick Subs, they were most notable. Well, they had a lot of notable qualities. They were a psychobilly band. At some point, their stand-up bass player lost his left hand, so he would play with his stub. They would often play shows with a group called Satan's Cheerleaders, which were a bunch of alternative strippers that would wear 666 cheerleading uniforms and do cheers and dances while the band would play. And I think they were the opening band on every single show for about 5 years in Austin.
Every scene has like those two or three bands that somehow managed to get on every show.
And it didn't matter like what the genre was either, because I saw them with metal bands. I saw them with like indie rock bands. It was everything. They were everywhere. They don't really have much in terms of recorded output. They put out a live album that sounds decent, I guess. And you know what? I couldn't tell you anything about any of the songs that I remember either, because it was just spectacle. It wasn't even necessarily the music itself. So what is the fucking one that I sent you? Like a bunch of dead folks?
Something like that.
It was Creepy Dead Folk.
We'll play Creepy Dead Folk.
All right, let's listen to Creepy Dead Folk. ¶¶
Wesley, a bunch of creepy dead folk in the company after me, all the after my brain, a place in my sleep, a turn to my baby, says they darling, this baby is in pain. Well, run to the house, run to the mall, run to your car, baby, don't trip and fall. There I have to hurt you, there's nothing you can do to make me get home. A few days later, we're back at the house. The doors are boarded up, we're being quiet as a mouse. Oh, they're banging on the window, dancing on the rough to do the scuffle and the limp and the jitter, but all at your stand. Well, run to the house, run to the mall, run to the car, baby, don't turn that ball. There I have to hurt you, there ain't nothing you can do to get me at home. Crazy, they were starting to move. When Elvis, Gene, and Buddy all jumped in on the groove, well, and Elvis sang the song. Buddy got on stage and he sang Peggy Sue, yeah. And I run to the house, run to the mall, run to your mom, baby, don't run that ball. There I have to hurt you, there ain't nothing you can do to make me get involved.
Yeah, I originally was thinking about sharing a band like that because, like I said, I've been struggling with this particular homework assignment. And there's lots. I mean, I think the one that sticks out of my mind all the time is One Ton Tommy Gun. I think they're from Westfield, and they are just, you see their big dumb logo in every single show flyer from here to Kingdom Come all of the time, playing regardless of where it is or what it is.
What does One Ton Tommy Gun sound like?
Shit. No, I'm just being an asshole. They're tougher hardcore, plus deathcore, plus melodic metal riffy woo.
Just, so they were the proto Kingsmen.
I mean, I guess so. I don't think I've ever heard Kingsmen.
You have, even if you haven't.
Maybe I was walking in and some guy with a t-shirt and guitar I didn't care about was on stage and that might have been them. Who knows? You never know.
Well, but they have a new record that's, I think it just came out, so we might have to do a track-by-track breakdown.
Aren't they one of those bands that has existed like without an album for so many years? They've just been playing shows anyway.
Yeah, they have somehow ended up on one of the top spots on every pay-to-play fest in your neck of the woods for a while.
Yeah, they're on Franz's label.
Oh, good for them.
Killing it. Killing it, my dudes.
Who's the rich kid in the band?
Watch, they're the nicest guys.
Fuck yeah. Them.
Well, they're throwing money into like the fucking flesh-lined pit of disgust that is like the pay to play scene. So even if they are the nicest guys, they're schmucks.
I don't know, man. I'll talk all the shit I want. We're in quarantine for the foreseeable future. You're not going to do shit.
Yeah, man. Social just
going to drive to your house and fight you.
This is the time you want a road rage and just holler out a window. Now do it. You know, no one's coming
especially
near
if you. Especially if it's people protesting that they want to be let outside so they can buy fertilizer.
Oh God, we had that at the Capitol yesterday. Alex Jones leading an army of pay to play protesters.
Baskin Robbins, enough is enough.
I need the follow up story in 2 weeks to all these people getting sick.
The problem is, I know that we're getting off topic here. The problem is that from what I've seen, the only people that have died of COVID are genuinely good people. And everybody that is bad that has gotten this disease has come away with it scot-free.
I mean, Rand Paul seems to be okay, so the story checks out.
Bojo's okay.
Yeah, that motherfucker, he was in the hospital. He's like, everyone's like, this is it. He's doing terrible. And then like a day later, he's fucking golden.
Because they probably unplugged a bunch of ventilators from regular people and jammed it into him to keep him alive.
Yeah. I mean, Jair Bolsonaro is responsible for bringing COVID to Brazil personally, and he's fine. I mean, aside from all of the various comorbidities he has.
Oh, man. I wonder if any of the bands we're featuring are safe and sound right now. Like, if any of their members are sick.
Everybody, be safe, be good. Let's take it back to the Northeast.
All right, for my second band, it is, again, from New Jersey, a band called Divinity Destroyed. The show I talked about earlier for Flipside, Divinity Destroyed played that one also. And, like I said, I was, like, 14 at the time and, like, just starting to get into heavy music. And they were, like, one of the first bands I had seen that, like, were actually heavy at certain points, depending on the song. And it just kind of blew my mind at the time. And I really wouldn't even know how to describe them as a band. Like, I can't think of other bands that sound like them all that much. It's like a little bit of proggy, a little bit of heavy metal, occasionally a little bit of death metal, a whole lot of angst, a ton of angst.
It's angsty music.
It's super angsty music, which was perfect because I was an angsty teenager, and like that's exactly what I needed. I needed someone singing about crying to the sky and heaven take me home and feeling all sad and stuff, and this was perfect for that. And I just saw, like, this week, they're actually getting back together to play a show, hopefully in November, but I don't know about that one.
We'll see. We'll see about that. What's this song?
The song is called Forsaken.
Forsaken. many songs do you think were called Forsaken in that area of bands, like in 2002 to 2005?
A couple dozen.
I mean, Stained came from Long Meadow, Massachusetts. It was like, I grew up like next to where they came from. That's just angst epicenter right there in music.
And that's why you're a good old country boy.
Oh man, I don't have a dirt road song on tap quick enough for Aaron Lewis going Dunkin' Donuts in the AM.
Like a good from Massachusetts, country. But I have a Confederate flag sticker on my pickup truck.
Yeah. Just couldn't be any less fucking country if you tried.
I listened to a live version of this track, and he opens it up with the song's about a difficult period in my life. It's called Foreskin.
Yeah, they were very wacky, which kind of took away some of the coolness factor eventually. She's like, oh, you're just dorks. I get it. But I still have, you know, fond memories of seeing them a bunch of times, and I'll occasionally hop onto YouTube and listen to songs or pop a CD. And then I actually still have one of their shirts and it still fits me. So yes, got some special love for Divinity Destroyed.
That's a fucking feat, man, for you to keep that shape. I God knows none of the fucking shirts I've ever bought from any of these timeframes will ever fit me again. Those crop tops they are now.
The key is to start husky and stay husky.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I didn't know there was like no rock bottom for this ass, man.
We're probably over time on this one, aren't we?
No, we'll go for it. I am going to play a song from my beloved childhood. My boys and I are garage bands. Every garage band we ever came up with was all played in the same space, and it was at my friend Seth's house, who just released an album yesterday. Seth is a real rocker. He's great. But it was his uncle's practice space. His uncle had a band called the Donut Kings. And these guys were just what we would look forward to in terms of like boomer, weekend warrior, dad rock, in terms of just like anything you could ever think of. It's like they had their own van. They would drive to like any stupid little diner that would have them on any given Tuesday. They did not care. They just played shows. And we would look at them and we'd be like, we're not going to end up like them. We're going to be real rock and roll, man.
The drummer in one of my high school bands, his dad was that guy. He was the drummer in a band called the Cadillacs with an X. They would play any fucking Mexican food restaurant in any shitty small town within 150 miles any night of the week. He had a glorious mullet.
Yeah. Oh, man, this guy, too. And he would always yell at us for playing too loud because we had our fucking half stacks in his basement. Like, we were dumb asses. And I think he yelled at us most because none of us knew how to play our instruments at all.
Yeah, I got a lot of that from that guy. Fuck you, Enrique.
Yeah, and we all called him Uncle Nate because he was the guy's, you know, uncle. So fuck you, Uncle Nate. Thanks for letting us use your space, bro. So the band is a surf rock band, primarily, from Western Massachusetts, where you have to drive 2.5 hours to get to Ocean. But the name of the song is Drag Racing Robot, and it is a fucking bop.
That's cheating, man.
Enabled, sample and hold. of a 9,000 horsepower rocket sled heat drag racing robot. That's cheating, man. Drag racing robot. That's cheating, man.
It's a bop. Certified bop. Certified jam. Certified slam. Drag racing robot.
Drag racing robot.
You haven't heard it yet. That's what it sounds like.
No, I mean, I have heard it. I listened to it. That's why I was just yelling, that's cheating, man.
Why is that cheating? Is that a cover?
It's a line that he has in the song, bro.
Oh.
Oh, we're going off the rails at the very end.
I forgot that he says that. And you're a good boy for listening to the song.
I do appreciate the quasi-Weird Al vocal delivery.
That's Uncle Nate. That's the man in the flesh. That's him. He's the drummer, too.
Impressive.
He puts a microphone by his drum kit like a true motherfucker.
Did he have the headset microphone?
No, I don't think so.
I was just going to ask that. I saw a band do that once and thought it was the stupidest looking thing.
I think it's just the straight pole mic stand that just sits right next to his kit and he turns his whole head 9 degrees that way.
Oh, Enrique of the Cadillacs had the headset microphone he would sing while he was playing the drums.
It's depressing.
I blame Tommy Lee.
I blame Tommy Lee for a lot of things. Mostly the spread of HPV. We should probably start wrapping this one, right?
Let's wrap it up. It's definitely time. Yeah, it's about fifth, you know, numbers.
We've been having a good time going back in the past, talking about them old days. I think it's been nice. It's been a nice little revisit down memory road and all that.
Any excuse to talk about some of the old things that we liked is always enjoyable, especially when there's not a lot to talk about right now.
I know that like we're way over time, but could we play one more song to close it?
Yeah, this is the closer. What is it, my man?
There's a band that I really liked from Katy, which is one of the many, many suburbs of Houston. They were called By the End of Tonight. I don't think they're still around anymore. They recorded their first record in community college for like their friend's final exam project. And they, from there, like put out a bunch more records. They eventually got signed to like Temporary Residence and they, you know, chilled out their sound a lot. And they did more post-rock stuff, did some collaborations with more famous electronic and post-rock artists. But their first album holds a pretty special place in my heart. Their drummer used to play on a child's drum set, and you'll hear it with this.
I can't wait.
He used real cymbals, it still sounds like shit. It's Ooh. Great, though. I saw him at a skating rink in Spring, Texas. and it was dope. They're a cool band. They had some chops, and I really liked it. I like to revisit their old records, and I want you guys to give it a listen, too, and hear what it was like for bright-eyed Joe back in the day when the world was still a hope, still full of hope.
All right, boys, keep it metal, keep it safe, keep indoors. We'll see you next week.
Love y'all.
Bye.
listening to 66.6 FM. Radio TOVH. The Flush.
That's cheating, man.